This is GamesAtWork.biz, your weekly podcast about gaming, technology, and play. Your hosts are Michael Martin, Andy Piper, and Michael Rowe. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone and are not the opinions of any organization which they have been, are, or may be affiliated with. This is episode 335, Horsing Around. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon. Michael Rowe here on Friday. It's Friday. It's always Friday here at GamesAtWork.biz studio. Woo. And we record on Friday because that's what we do, because it's Friday. Anyway, I'm here with my friend and co-host Michael Martin for an exciting, exciting show for you this week. Michael, how the heck are you?
It's Friday, which I oftentimes...
Yes, because we're recording.
I oftentimes ask on Monday. I'd rather
be Friday yet?
I'd rather be recording. Yes, exactly. Oh, well, you're right. We do have a fun show, and we have a few ranty pieces of our fun show to deal with today.
Not so. Randy.
No, ranty. Ranty.
Rant.
Luckily I have a T filter in addition to a P pop filter.
Pop filter.
All right. So first thing, I came across this and I just had to laugh. There is a website called The Main Quest. That's M-A-N-E for those of you who are homonym challenged. And it is the article is 8 Common Horse Mistakes I Want Game Developers to Stop Making. And with all of the things that we talk about here from an AI and VR and AR perspective, it's important that the motion and the graphics and the gravity and all those things and the physics ought to work really right and well. And this article, and I'm not personally a horse person, but I can appreciate where horse people would come as a result of all this. They would really like to see horses actually move the way a horse moves in real life and not have their legs bend wrong ways.
Yeah, when I first saw the article come across the feed from you, I was looking at it and I was like, yeah, animation is hard, right? Then I started looking at it in detail. I'm like, no, you're just lazy. You're lazy. I mean, everybody's used the first example is random knee bending.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like, yeah, it's because, you know, a lot of game companies use this same dev kit for the motions, right? The popular horse Animaset Pro asset. And it's like, just do it right. Just do it right. And the one that I really got a kick out of is the random neighing. Yes. The random neighing when you brush the horse the wrong way.
Oh, yeah.
And actually, it's tortured. It's not even random. It is tortured.
Yeah. I remember seeing that there was like, here are the zones you should brush the horse. And when you don't, or when you do it in the wrong spot, bad news.
Yeah, I know that Andy and our friend Epred both played Red Dead Redemption.
Ugh.
Easy for you to say three times fast.
Yeah.
I did not get into that game. Not that I didn't get into it. I didn't buy it, so I didn't have it to play to get into it. but I always wondered about the horse movement on that, because the horse movement in Skyrim was very mechanical.
Well, these are complex things, right? So I guess if it's an investment, you're considering where you spent the investment. But if it's a common callable service, wouldn't it make sense that that common callable service would get better and better and better over time? Wouldn't you think?
Only if you upgrade it.
I guess so. I guess.
And it is funny, and I think horses are gorgeous animals. And matter of fact, on our nightly walks, we actually walk by a little horse farm.
Oh, cool.
Near our house.
Yeah.
And horses are beautiful. Badly mucked stables are horrible.
Well, it could be a Herculean task.
I'll let that linger right there. I'll just let that linger right there.
It could be a Herculean task to get them clean. So.
Yes, but if you're going to have the stables, that's part of the job, is to muck the stables. I don't know if we've talked about this before, and I'm sure we didn't talk about it on the show.
Probably not, but try.
One of, One of my first jobs out of college, I was working for this very small consulting firm, and we did custom programming for people, mainly on site, because the owner of the company actually had the office on his farm, and the actual office was above the stable. And he kept horses. So you did not want to work at the office. And the couple of times I did, it's like, Never again. These should be mucked. Because just that thought just lingered. So the
life hack for that, which I'm surprised he didn't offer to you, is Vicks VapoRub.
No, it was don't work at the office.
Well, there's that
too. Go get billable hours at customer sites. I guess that was the intention, right? We don't want you here. We want you at the customers.
So you mentioned a moment or three ago about Red Dead Redemption, and I had to think about that really hard to say it correctly the first time. I agree with you. That's hard. And you found a nice video here about a new MMO. And this time coming out of Amazon, right?
Yes. Yeah, Amazon Game Studio. And I've been following this for some time. I can't remember when they first announced that they were making an MMO, but I remember seeing stories over the last, I want to say about the last year or so. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you don't build an MMO in a year. This is a heck of a lot of work. But they've announced a open beta taking place from the 9th to the 12th of September.
Oh, cool.
For anyone who wants to... test it out, play it. I'm sure they're using that to one, check demand, and two, check for performance issues and how their scaling works. But this is going to be pretty cool. It's the basic idea appears to be, it's called New World, and it appears to be, you know, the colonization of the U.S., mm-hmm. right? The New World, so the Americas, I guess. But with magic and spells and demons, et cetera, thrown in. So if you watch the gameplay video, which I think is maybe more of a trailer than a gameplay video.
Yeah, because it's kind of like all these cutscene-y sort of thing after thing.
Very cutscene-y, yeah. But there are certain clips in there that look like gameplay.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a mix. I'm probably going to test it out when it comes out. I don't know if I need yet another MMO to pay. But the nice thing is there are no monthly subscriptions.
Oh.
So it's an MMO that's going to be $40, I guess. And I'll have to check it out.
That'll be cool.
Yeah.
That'll be really cool. I like the fact that they've got Buffalo in there. I didn't get a chance to see them move. To know if
to see if they bent their legs in the right way.
They bent their legs in the right way, but that's kind of fun. So now let's dip our hoof, so to speak, into the pool. And yes. I was eager to see this next article from Screen Rant about these specialized swim goggles that give you a head-up display. And I remembered that you had a pair, and I was wondering if these are the same as yours. And if there's anything new going on with them.
Yeah, this is a company called Form, and it's the Form Swim Goggles. These are the pair that I have.
Oh,
I've had them for about 2 years now. I'm trying to remember if it was a Kickstarter when it started and I've got them, or if I got them once the Kickstarter ended. But either way, I've had them about 2 years. And what they did or do is they track your swim. Mm-hmm. They give you a head-up display. It gives you your distance, your turn times. If you stop for a while, it'll count the rest. And it synchronizes with your Android or iPhone device and will provide how far did you swim, what strokes did you do, how efficient are your strokes, etc. The reason this article is out there is something I've been beta testing for them over the summer, which is workouts. And so I don't know if you're a swimmer.
I swim recreationally.
Swimming is not. I find swimming very therapeutic, mm-hmm. Because you can just do, you know, swim for an hour and just keep doing laps, and it becomes very yoga zen-like, right? Because it's just a pattern, and you're going and you're going, and you can focus on other things. But what you don't do, unless you purposely focus on this, is a workout. And what do I mean by a workout? Let's say I've been kind of stuck at a plateau for my speed for the 50 free, right? Mm-hmm, 50 mm-hmm. meter freestyle swim. And to improve that, you've got to do different workouts. You got to work your arms. You got to work your legs. You've got to, you know, do different breathing techniques, et cetera, all to kind of force yourself, work your flutter kick. And so what they've introduced this summer in the beta that's just been announced in this article is these workouts that will be a subscription service.
Just like an MMO, but in your glasses.
What would it cost a month? Just to take a guess. Take a guess. A monthly payment.
$4.99.
No.
Oh, more? What?
$9.99.
Ooh.
Right, that's the magic number, right? Every subscription is $9.99. Anyway, but what's nice about it is you can get time-based workouts.
Uh-huh.
So I want to do a small, medium, or large time-based, and then in distance, each of those time-based, they have different objectives.
Yeah.
So one that I've really enjoyed is the it's like Plenty of 50s, right? Which is you do a 300 meter warm up.
Mm-hmm.
Then you do just 50 after 50 after 50 after 50 with breaks in between for like 6 seconds. And the goal is just try to force yourself to go faster and faster on the 50s. And then a 300 cool down, right? And okay. It's timed to be like 30 minutes, 45 minutes swim. The other nice thing about it is it will tell you, you know, for this exercise, you should use a kickboard, right? So you're just working on your kick. Or for this one, you want to use a pull buoy, which is, you know, so you keep your legs stiff. Mm-hmm. You don't kick at all. And you're just working your arms. So you can use those and gloves to, you know, get the feel. What should the stroke feel like, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so there's different workouts that you can do, which is really, really cool. And it will give you time to say, okay, now get rid of the kickboard, press when you're ready to go, right?
Right.
And it'll keep track of your rest periods. It keeps track of your swim periods, etc. And then it gives you trends over time and how your workout's doing. And because it's a head-up display in your goggle,
right,
you're constantly seeing about 6 feet out in front of you the appropriate information for that workout. So if you're doing a 50, you want to know what's your split. How long did it take me to get to do my flip turn, right?
Right.
So it'll show, you know, I'm this far and I did my split and it's, you know, 20 seconds or 25 seconds or whatever. If you're getting to the point where you're doing the longer routines where it's like a bunch of 200s and you're doing it in backstroke, right? Because
mm-hmm.
It'll keep track of what stroke you're doing too. You want to know that you're halfway through that one set of 200, right?
Right.
And all of that information is constantly up ahead, right out 6 feet out in front of you. And your overall, it's really cool. So if you're a swimmer who swims for exercise or for performance, these are the coolest goggles I've found to help me out, because what I used to do is kind of try to keep track of my swim by, you know, little mental games, right? Count every 10 laps or count, you know, or use my fingers and swim with like one finger bent. I've got 9 left to go, 8 left to go, 7, you know, keeping track of where I am on my swim with my finger. And you still, because it's so zen-like, you zone out and you lose track where you are.
Hmm.
And it's like, I'm trying to do, you know, 74 lanes on the pool, which is a mile, right? And am I on 68 or was I at 78? Oh, crap, right? Right, you lose track. So
sure.
It's great.
Super interesting. I didn't do much swimming for exercise except for when I was in Hungary, and I would go to the pool at the American school early in the mornings and do sort of their free swim and run laps then. So I liked it. But I also, I think just like running, it's one of those things that if you're really a runner or a swimmer, you're into it, you get it, you do it. What I've found super intriguing though about your description here, and having watched a lot of Olympics while they're going on in Japan, I could imagine that if you're in lane four and you're out in front of everybody and there's somebody who's catching up to you in lane eight, you can't see them when you're in the pool. But wouldn't it be cool if in the pool your glasses would let you know that lane eight is catching up to you? Or wouldn't it be
No, that'd be horrible.
Wouldn't it be cool to know? I mean, if you're doing this for racing, right? You know, how are you doing against your best ever time? You know, are you getting the right strokes per minute or per whatever?
There were some
neat AR, or not AR, but they were graphics superimposed on the swimmers that kind of showed where you were in relation to the others, ahead or behind, how many meters. And are you making it up or are you losing it? And you can imagine those gauges being there and in your glasses that you don't really require a lot of heavy cognitive load, but you're like, okay, I'm at a pace now. If I sustain this pace, I'm going to beat my all-time record. But I'm going to get tired. So maybe I need to back off on that pace to get into the sustained spot, especially for the longer lengths. I don't know. Just saying.
Yeah. Yeah, any type of metric that's independent of others, I think, would be really easy to do it.
Mm-hmm. But
connecting to the data of other swimmers would be very difficult, I think.
It's connected, especially swimming.
Right. I could see that in a swimming competition.
Sure.
But in any other event, you know, I don't see, you know, so we've got seven lanes at the pool that I swim at.
Mm-hmm.
Three of them are designed for long swims, and five of them, is that right? And four, seven, three. Math, it's hard.
Math.
Especially when
you're swimming. A lot swimming.
Of things are hard. The other four are for short periods of swim.
Yes.
And so I do find myself when I'm swimming and I see somebody coming up in the other lane right out of the corner of my eye, I will speed up.
Yeah.
Right? It's just a natural
human tendency. Nature. Sure.
Right. But the thing is, you know, I am nowhere near at competition swimming. I was that in elementary school. There are serious swimmers at this pool. And it's like, if I see them coming, I might try, but they're going to blow past me and keep going. Right. But I love it. I find swimming to be very relaxing, and it's great exercise. And it gives you a burn afterwards, right? Because it's a full body exercise that afterwards you've got, you know, an hour or more of elevated metabolism all going because of the swim.
Yes. So,
and you know how you know you're swimming hard? When you get out of the pool and you sweat.
Oh, okay. I was going to say, I thought there was something around that.
Yeah, and because, you know, you're in cool water, so why would you sweat, right? But no, you know you've been swimming hard if you get out of the pool and you're sweating.
So let's move from waves in the pool to sine waves in terms of a hype cycle. Ah, see what I did there?
I was wondering where you went. That was like magic.
Like magic. No, so I love looking at the Gartner hype cycle, and over the years you and I have talked about this on a variety of things, and there's probably
hyped the hype cycle a lot.
Lots of different points on this hype cycle that we can probably talk about, but one of the interesting things, and I know this is the hype cycle for emerging technologies, right? So that's why,
also known as the hype cycle for hype.
Yes, that's why all the things that are here are like barely cresting the peak of inflated expectations or before it, as opposed to things that are in the trough of disillusionment, which is the sad place before people start using them. So is there anything, Michael, that when you look at this, that strikes you as like, no, that's not in the right place? Or, there's something interesting that is missing.
So before we go there, I'd like to describe the hype cycle for people who don't understand it.
Oh,
right.
That one's good too.
Because a lot of people misread the hype cycle. Right, they look at the bottom, they go, plateau will be reached. They look at those dates and they go, okay, so that means in 2 years, non-fungible tokens will be blah, blah, blah. So as someone who spent many years in strategy and working with the hype cycle output, right, the hype cycle is a point in time that something can actually slip in either direction at any given time. And as such, the time frames are totally irrelevant. They're totally irrelevant, right? So look at the let's look at digital humans.
Yes.
Right, which is currently in between the innovation trigger and the peak of inflated expectations, halfway between the two, and it has a yellow triangle which says greater than 10 years.
Yeah.
So you're like, okay, sometime after 10 years, this will be fine. But lots of things can change, and suddenly it could be down into the slope of enlightenment next year, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I really get is when they start breaking things up, breaking technologies apart, and putting each component in a different space. For example, we have a non-fungible tokens.
Yeah.
In a turquoise, light blue, yep. 2 to 5 years bubble, sitting right at the peak of inflated expectations. I think this is crashing next year. Okay. Oh.
Yeah, I thought it was already in the trough of disillusionment. I was surprised to see it at the top there.
And mm-hmm. and what are non-fungible tokens built on? They're blockchain. Built on the blockchain, which leverages decentralized finance, which is in the growth part of the innovation trigger, and it has 5 to 10 years to go. It also leverages decentralized identification, which is in a light blue bubble starting to slide down the trough of disillusionment, right? So the purpose of the hype cycle, I love them. I think they're really cool, but they're also sending a message based off of the analyst who wrote it, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's so much more art than science.
Yeah, true.
For example, I really like the fact that AI augmented software engineering is on the hype cycle. I think it's a little high. I think it is nowhere near the peak of inflated expectations. I think there's still so much work to do on it before people go, oh, man, this isn't really it, right? There are individual APIs or individual tools or individual vendors or individual technologies that are advancing faster or slower in that space. Self-integrating applications. Boy, I wish we had those last year. Homomorphic encryption. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah.
Me too. This is cool. I actually worked with some of our research brethren years ago on this, like mm-hmm. 6 years ago, right?
6 years ago, and they're in a 5 to 10 bubble.
Yes. Yes. Right. So it's interesting. Again, the placement. Quantum is way down at the bottom from a machine learning perspective.
Yeah, which I find kind of interesting too, because there are a number of elements around quantum that why call out machine learning only, right?
Right.
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, I like the hype cycle. This is cool. There's some cool stuff on there. Multi-experience, is that an MMO?
What is that? I don't know what that is. That was one of the things I was like, okay, that's strange. An active metadata management. I'm not so sure I understand what that is either. But always fun things to look at and allow you to think about, pontificate, and think about new technologies. And
you could probably do a whole podcast episode on that. There's probably a Gartner Hype Cycle podcast out there. And if so, let them know that we sent you. We could use a finder's fee.
It'd be fun. Yeah, we could call it the hype cycle, right? It'd be like Soul Cycle, but for yes. hype. So staying the on the thought of technology and current technology, new technology. Here we have some technology that's been around for 10 years. 10 years. Yes. And it's a Finnish. I like how they call it a startup, because after 10 years,
after 10 years, you're no longer a startup. You have started.
You've started. So
it's a hype cycle.
But bump. They got a blue dot.
Yes.
So Sailfish OS is another mobile operating system. And I'm maybe ashamed to admit it. I guess I am more than a bit, is that I have no familiarity with Sailfish OS whatsoever.
I remember when they launched about 10 years ago, because, you know, the ideal number of competing standards has always been three. mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. If it's only two, you bifurcate the market and you get into the just, you know, an us versus them type situation, and innovation can stagnate. In the early days of mobile phones, you had Windows Phone,
BlackBerry.
You had Palm, you had BlackBerry, and then that morphed into BlackBerry, Palm, and Apple, and that
and Microsoft,
morphed into, yeah. right?
Yep.
I thought I said,
yeah, he said no. Windows Phone there too.
I'm not we sure. drop Palm and yeah. we get Windows.
Yeah.
Taking off, and then you kind of lose the Windows, and it's Android. Well, actually, you lose BlackBerry.
What,
and you
get
Android, Apple, and Windows, and then Windows kind of died off, and these guys are a bunch of former developers for Nokia, which was the dominant cell phone carrier globally for the longest period of time. I had multiple Nokia phones over the years, and I thought they were really, really cool. So what's important for them is they have now turned profitable. So it took 10 years to become profitable, and it's really a couple of things that they've done. One is they've created this app support for Linux. So on Sailfish, I assume this means you can now start running Android apps built in. So that's kind of cool. They've also starting to do some stuff with automobiles, just like, you know, Google Car or Android Car, whatever it's called, and CarPlay.
Android Auto, yeah.
Android Auto, that makes much more sense. and they're cutting deals with, I guess it's Huawei is one of them that I saw, to tap into the Chinese market, etc. So I think it's great. If you go to their website and look at some of their designs, they have a very similar look and feel to iOS and Android today.
Mm-hmm.
So that will reduce the adoption curve for people. What's really interesting is what's going to make them good enough or unique enough to drive a developer ecosystem around the globe to grow beyond a distant third to be a competitive third to really help push the OS market in this space.
Yeah.
Very cool.
I was looking at the website, sailfish.org or sailfishos.org, and it is a very clean design and quite nice. And you know, you're right. Innovation needs competition to push it forward.
Yep.
Right. So absolutely. Okay. So switching gears a minute around privacy, Michael, you found an interesting article here from The Verge about a particular tool that exposed a couple user records here.
Yeah. Like. Yeah. This is yet another story. In this case, the fact it's an app building tool that Microsoft has to help people quickly build new apps. And what this story really is to me is understanding defaults, right? If you think about it, if I'm building a tool to help build tools or build apps, my development environment is going to want to be very open so I can test things and debug things and figure things out quite easily.
Yep.
But my production deployment of that same app should be very locked down from the standpoint of a security and privacy perspective. Mm-hmm. And evidently in this one, the default permissions, right? Did it again. And so I spend a lot of time when I'm playing with a new tool or a new application or whatever, trying to learn the settings or at least understand where they are for this very reason. It's another one of these, check your defaults. It's the tyranny of defaults. Check your defaults, whether you're developing an application or using a new application
or a router or anything.
So, yeah. Just wanted to, that's this week's public service announcement.
Check your defaults. Yes. Change your admin password.
Yeah.
Few things like
from that. From admin
to something
to
else.
Password.
Yeah. Something else was me suggesting not the word something and else, but, you know, something
ooh,
else.
Ooh, what if you put something else with a 3 instead of the E? Would that be safe?
Yeah. You got to imagine that might have been used once or twice in the past, right?
million.
Okay, so rounding out today's episode, a couple of fun things to close this out from my perspective. So a Newsweek article caught my eye because while we're not an Apple podcast, there are some things from Apple that do crop up from time to time. And this particular funny article was about a letter that has surfaced with Steve Jobs' signature on it. And the reason why this is such an important thing, it said for almost $500,000, which is nuts. It's on Apple letterhead. And the person wrote to him saying that he would like to have an autograph from Steve Jobs. So the letter itself that sold for $500,000 or almost $500,000 is replying back to the person from May of 1983. And it says, "I'm honored that you write, but I'm afraid I don't sign autographs. Sincerely, Steve Jobs," in which he signed his name.
Yeah, I thought that was hilarious. Yeah. Now, the funny thing is, did they confirm it was his signature?
Well,
I mean, sure, it's been confirmed for the, but I could just see him having an intern sign it.
Yeah, well, that could have been the case too. So, but apparently, it was his habit to sign with all lowercase letters.
Yeah,
and for those of you versed in the art, may remember too that Steve Jobs was a really big on fonts.
Yes.
So the fact that he was all lowercase in this way is another interesting element to, and interesting to see that thread rolling through everything too.
Yeah.
So,
very cool.
Find a crystal. Cool. And then my last thing, when we talk about, hey, what are you guys doing these days and what are you up to? Yesterday I was really pleased to join in for a lecture on barbecue. This lecture on barbecue actually went through the whole thing. It's a noun, it's a verb, it's an adjective. Here in North Carolina, barbecue is serious business. And
it's a sauce.
It's a sauce. It's a bunch of things, and it's not Casey. I will put a couple of links into the show notes for this, but the one that I've included here, Michael, just to show you at least to start, is about the Campaign for Real Barbecue that is certified wood cooked, so that you're smoking off of wood fired ovens or pits or what have you, the barbecue that you're making. And this is something that's been going on for a little while, and you'll recognize that the establishments that use wood to make their barbecue actually are certified in this way.
So I do have one question. I mean, it looks like a great set of merch. Do you pronounce that on the hat?
Faux-cue? No faux-cue?
I thought it's true-cue.
Oh, well, it's a circle slash. Right.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Faux-cue.
Good fun stuff right there.
I love it. Anyway, I think that's all the time we have for today's show. And we want to thank everybody for reaching out and providing us feedback over the last week. Do us a favor. Go over to twitter.com/gamesatwork_biz. Let us know what you're thinking of the show, or even better, go to your favorite podcatcher and give us a rating. Help others find us so that maybe you can benefit from their input to the show. We'd love to hear from you.
Awesome. We'll see you next time. Enjoy your cue.
Bye. You've been listening to GamesAtWork.biz, the podcast about gaming, technology, and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and would like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.